Everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get rolling. It's Monday, so calls are a little light, but they're going to start coming in heavier. They usually do. If you want to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, anything you want to talk about, press 1 on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better your chances of getting through. So we'll get started. I'll keep you updated as we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority. You name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. And, you know, during the week here when we only have an hour, we don't get to all the calls, so I think I'm just going to skip an open today, and we're going to get right to the phones and see what it is you want to talk about. We're going to start off in Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dave, I really appreciate you taking it on. Kevin, I'm sorry, I've been listening to Dave Ramsey. I do apologize about that, but thanks.
Hey, Steve, I'm going to have to put you back on hold, and we're going to have to check that line. I can hear you, but I can't. It's really, really garbled. So I'll have Bridget pick back up, see if we can get that fixed. And I'm going to move on to Indiana. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I was wondering if you could look at my business report for last year.
I can. While I'm taking a look here real quick, why don't you tell me a little bit about the operation and what's going on while I look at some numbers here?
Well, it's a 2000 Volvo truck, and I run a dry van. Pretty much Kansas City back to Ohio, and Ohio back to Kansas City.
Okay. So, leased to a carrier, pretty much dedicated run.
Yep.
So, I am looking at last year's report. So, you did... about 97,000 miles, which is lower than average. And that's not a bad thing. My goal would always be to drive less miles and make more money. So low miles is not a bad thing. Gross revenue, $1.29 a mile. Expenses, it actually looks like for an operation like this, fuel's a little on the high side. 37 cents a mile for fuel. So at $1.29 a mile, we're on the low end of revenue. You know, if you get down into these numbers, it's not impossible to make money, but you've really got to work hard at controlling expenses. You know, and I get guys up in the $1.70, $1.80 a mile revenue. They don't have to work that hard on their expenses. Their numbers still look good. I encourage them. Every business should work on lowering expenses. But when you've got lower revenue, it becomes critically important to control those. So what kind of things do you think you could do to get that fuel number better?
I am getting new tires this year, so that'll drop it four tenths per mile.
Okay. That's going to help. Any other modifications you have lined up for fuel economy?
Yeah. I don't know what you think about my my maintenance costs from last year.
That's where I was going next. 22 cents a mile. What year is this truck?
A 2000 Volvo.
Okay. Did you do a lot of modifications? Are you doing a lot of reconditioning, trying to get it, you know, back into condition?
A lot of reconditioning.
Okay. And when that's going on, the maintenance number is hard to look at. 22 cents a mile on a 2000 model truck is actually really high. It's about double what we would expect. But when we buy an older truck, many times those first couple of years, we're just putting a lot of money back into it. So I'm not going to get too crazy about maintenance. The fuel economy I would focus on. And it sounds like, given the run you're on, there really isn't anything you can do to change revenue, right?
I mean, my revenue, I guess it was all the other runs I had to do because the runs got canceled, but my revenue, it's about $1.60 to $1.80 a mile. But because of those others that were coming in there, they were lower.
Okay.
So that's what brought the revenue down.
Got it. Okay. So the goal then would be to try to stay on that run as often as you possibly could to get that revenue number back up. That's the two places I would focus are revenue and fuel. That's where your best opportunity is going to be. You know, given these numbers, how many years have you been in business?
This is my second year.
Okay. So we're still early. I mean, these numbers are okay. I mean, I'm assuming making this amount of money, you can stay in business. You know, you're doing okay. We need to grow from here. I mean, the bottom line is what's most important. You're profiting 44 cents a mile. If that was all we could expect, I would say something has to change. I mean, in my opinion, now this is totally up to you. Some people would say 44 cents a mile, it's my truck, I get to do what I want, I'm fine with that. For me, 44 cents a mile is not enough reward for the risk of being in business and all the things that could go wrong, plus all the extra work you do. You know, this is 44 cents a mile is a good wage for a driver, but not much more than that.
I spent 3 weeks off in November just getting the end frame done on my truck, so
those are all things we take into account.
Those
are all things we take into account. And like I say, these numbers aren't horrible. If the bills are getting paid and we can grow from here, then that's not such a bad thing. You know, you made $43,000 for the year net, and that's a combination of two things. One, the revenue per mile is low and the miles are low. You know, I've seen some guys that make 44 cents a mile, but they go out and run 160,000 miles. You know, and they end up making 60 or 70,000. That's not the model I like. It's just too much work. So, you know, I would focus on lowering that fuel cost. That would be one of my goals this year, to get that fuel cost down under 30 cents a mile. Yeah, you're at 37 now. So if you did that, then we'd be up over 50 cents a mile net. You know, the profit would have gone from 43,000 up over 50,000. Those are significant. So I would focus on fuel, set a goal to get it under 30 by, say, halfway through the year this year. And, you know, again, I don't know how much control you have over it, but obviously if your mileage pay on that dedicated run is that much higher, you want to stay on that as often as you can.
Yep. I just spent so much on regular maintenance last year that I didn't do any fuel modifications, sir. So that's my goal this year.
Yep. And that all makes sense. So, and you're checking in on the numbers. That's perfect. I mean, you're doing the right stuff. Just keep doing it.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go back and see if we have Steve now. Steve, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me better now?
I can. It sounds much better. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to run a couple of things by you. About the next couple of months, I'm going to find my authority, you know, to run on my own. My equipment is currently paid for, and right now I'm leased to a company. And you know, which is my revenue is $1.19 a mile, and the reason that is because I'm running a dedicated account, and I'm just only working maybe 3-4 days a week, somewhere along in there, and my expense is like 63 cents a mile, you know, on my expense. So listening to Dave Ramsey plan and all, I'm able to get my personal You know, my personal bills about around $1,300 a month, where I'm able to live off of. Okay. And I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions to make sure and make certain that I'm headed in the right direction in this area.
Okay.
My goal was last year to net $67,000, and I come under that. $57,000 this year. Is that like a pretty good goal to sort of set forth, you know, whenever I do activate my authority in that area?
You know, here's the good news. If you do a couple things right, you should be able to blow that number away. And here's why I say that. To be able to make as much as you did on $1.19 a mile is outstanding. That shows you're really good at controlling expenses. $1.19 a mile is like the bottom. I mean, if we go much below that, it's really hard to generate a profit. And you managed to generate a profit of almost 60 cents a mile. That's excellent on that little bit of revenue. You've got your personal expenses down to a place where, sheesh, it's almost impossible to fail if that's all the money you need to pay the bills and survive. So let me get to a break. I'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about this. But I think you have put yourself in an excellent position to really be able to succeed with your own authority. We'll talk about that when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get back to the phones. I was talking with Steve in Georgia. So, Steve, again, I think you've put yourself in a really good position. Your personal expenses are under control. Your business expenses are outstanding. That you're doing it the way that I recommend people do, and they almost never do it this way. So now when you move into having your own authority, you can focus on the new stuff. And this is where people fail most of the time, because they go get their own authority. Their expenses aren't under control. They don't understand cash flow. They have too many bills at home, and they can't focus on much of anything. And that's why they fail.
Mm-hmm.
You have the basics under control. Your foundation's excellent. So what I would recommend for you is you go into this just looking at primarily the revenue side and the relationship side. So you go in, build good relationships, whatever your model is going to be. If it's going to be brokers, find 3 to 5 really good brokers in areas that you like to run, build the relationship, work on the revenue and the relationship side. And, you know, with expenses, now, obviously, with your own authority, that 60 some cent a mile expense number has to go up, but that's okay.
Yes, sir.
You know, insurance is going to cost more. You're going to have to file fuel tax. There are new expenses. I would say that probably if everything else stays the same, you're going to raise expenses by about 15 cents a mile or so, roughly. But you have the opportunity to raise revenue by 60 cents a mile. You know, you're at $1.19 to go get $1.70 or so. Isn't that hard? And especially for you, because that's what you'll be able to focus on. You've got everything else under control. You can really focus on finding the good brokers, building the relationship, getting a good rate, and the profit should be outstanding.
Okay, great. Great. I'm really a proponent of paying cash for everything, you know, sort of like the Dave Ramsey plan. And,
yeah.
At the same time, I don't want to, you know, just go into it and take that risk because, you know, my truck that I'm in an 09 Cascadia, you know, with like 910,000 miles on it. But the good thing about that is that I'm doing oil analysis on it, and every one of the oil analysis that I do does come back at a zero. So, you know, but at the same time, you never know if any, you know, catastrophic thing may happen. You need something that, I kind of wanted something that I can kind of lean back on in that area and in that perspective. Now, also, I have a little over $10,000 saved, and, you know, and I don't, you know, scouted out my insurance and everything like that and know just about how much I'll be paying in that area. Now, starting out, I don't want to stay with factoring and really don't want to start out with factoring. What should you suggest in that area?
You know, one of the newest technologies and tools that's available that I really love, because I am I do not like factoring. I don't like it because people don't understand it. They don't realize how much it's really costing them, and it's an expense we don't need to incur. Now, there are some exceptions to that, but not many. So I'm just not a big fan of factoring. Truckstop.com has an awesome tool available now called LoadPay. And the cool thing about LoadPay, one, is most of the time when you factor, you've got to commit to factoring all of your bills through them or a very high percentage, which means you're going to pay a factoring fee on every load, whether or not you really need to. So that kind of bothers me. There's very little flexibility. With LoadPay, you get to pick and choose which loads you want to run through. I'm not going to call it factoring, although it's similar. You get to pick and choose which loads you run through, and you get to pick and choose the time frame. What I mean by that is the reason people might factor, because some people listening don't even understand what we're talking about right now. You pull a load for a broker. The broker typically pays in 30 days. Let's just say that's the scenario, and that's pretty common. And you need cash now. You can't wait 30 days. You have bills to pay and fuel to buy and all this other stuff. So factoring means you sell that freight bill to a factoring company, and they pay you right now, and they wait the 30 days to get paid, or they go after the broker and try to get their money sooner. There's lots of different scenarios. But of course, if they're going to pay you now, they're going to take their premium out of it. And it's roughly 5%. It's a pretty common number. And people go, oh, 5%, that's not bad. Well, yes, it is. That's loan shark rate. 5% on a payment that you could have received in 30 days is the same as charging something on a credit card that has a 60% interest rate. People don't understand that. That's why factoring bothers me so much. With LoadPay, you can say, well, you know what? I don't need the money today. I'm going to wait a week or two. Instead of waiting 30 days, I'm going to wait 15 days and I'll run it through LoadPay. And you would pay a lot less then. You're still going to pay a little bit of a premium, but a lot less. Or you might say, look, I need the money right now. You can get it today if you want. It's going to cost you a little more. You get to pick and choose exactly when you want to get your money and how much you need to pay to get it. And not only do you get to control it that way, like I said earlier, you also get to control it. You don't have to run every freight bill through them. And it's totally up to you. So you get to decide when you get your money, how much you have to pay for it. It's a much, much better system than factoring, but it's a little bit of security sitting there. So if you have one of those weeks where your cash flow isn't that great, you could run some freight bills through them. So I would go to truckstop.com and look at their load pay feature.
Okay. I do appreciate it. You know, like I said, I don't really use the factoring, but just in case I have to, I will do it. And I do appreciate the information because I just wanted to make certain that I'm headed in the right direction and I'm listening to the podcast religiously, you know, with the racing lane and also with the authority and everything like that. And I do appreciate everything you're doing for us.
You're welcome. I love it when somebody does things the right way. Not always my way, but they have a plan. They're seeking out information. They're asking good questions, and they're working the plan. People like that succeed. And I love seeing that. So congratulations, Steve. Let's go to, let me take a look at the clock here real quick. Yeah, let's get to a call. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Deb, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I have a health question. Hello?
Sure.
Hello?
You're there. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a health question today. I was told I have high cholesterol, and my family doctor wanted to put me on a statin drug.
Of course she does.
I'm not comfortable with that.
That's what doctors do. Doctors put us on drugs.
To you, you're cutting in and out.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
No, I was just hoping that maybe you can help me to know. I don't know how to get started on, lowering my
cholesterol. Yeah, I can. First off, do you know what your cholesterol numbers are?
Do you want the total or the LDH?
I want every number they provided you with.
Okay. The total cholesterol is 301.
Okay.
Triglycerides, 181. The HDL, 64. LDL, 201. And then there's a VLDL with 36.
Yeah, very low density lipoprotein. What's that one?
That's 36.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your diet, the way it has been up till now.
I don't eat any fried foods. I don't go to fast food places very, very little. When at work, I don't order out like everybody does. I try to eat healthy salads with veggies. I like fruit. I do eat meat. I never like fried food. It's in a crock pot or in one of these cookers that they drain the fat off.
Okay. All right. So hold that thought. The music's playing. Let me get to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about your numbers. And I'm going to run some calculations so that we look at these numbers differently than what your doctor is looking at. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Deb in Pennsylvania. So Deb, there's a couple things. We have screwed up the whole cholesterol thing so bad that it's hard to know where to start sometimes. But let's start with this. How old are you?
61.
So here's a really interesting study, and there is tons of evidence to prove this. Lots of studies, not just one. Women after 40, and especially after 50, and even more so as we get older, what they have proven is the higher your cholesterol numbers are, the longer you're going to live. Not the lower, especially for women, but for everybody, but they've proven it even more for women. The higher your cholesterol number is, the longer you're going to live. So the first thing I might say is, we might not want to lower your cholesterol numbers at all. There may be no reason to even worry about your cholesterol, period, because we've had it wrong for years about this. The higher your cholesterol numbers are, the lower your risk of Alzheimer's disease. We've proven that as well. The higher your cholesterol numbers are as you get older, you have much less risk for dementia. Cholesterol is really good for our brain. So all of those, you know, brain diseases we tend to face as we get older, Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's, they're all improved in people with higher cholesterol. So the one thing I would say is forget the statin. Do not let him. And you can always go get another opinion from, say, a naturopath who is trained just like your doctor, but they believe more in natural medicine. You know, you could always get a second opinion on this. But there is a ton of evidence to show as we get older, high cholesterol is actually very protective. It's not bad at all. Now, let's look at your numbers a different way. Here's what your doctor looks at. He looks at total cholesterol. And if we go by that guideline, 301 puts you at high risk. That's what he's worried about. That's what all the guidelines say. If we look at LDL of 201, very high risk. So now he's panicking. If we look at your HDL, it's optimal. I mean, you're not going to get a better HDL number than what you have. That's a really good sign. If we look at your triglyceride level, it's borderline. So when a doctor looks at this under the traditional ways, he's going, oh, no, you know, we've got to get this number down. But if we look at ratios instead, which all the new research shows the ratios are much more important than the raw numbers. So if we look at your cholesterol, total cholesterol to HDL ratio, it's 4.7. That's good. That puts you right smack in the middle of the good zone. So nothing to worry about there. If we look at your HDL to LDL ratio, again, yours is 0.3. Which again puts you right smack in the middle of the good range. If we look at your triglycerides to HDL, which many doctors believe is the most important ratio, yours is 2.8. We'd like to be under 4, and outstanding is under 2. You're at 2.8. That's completely normal. So given the fact that all the research shows higher cholesterol is better for women as they age, and all of your ratios are good, I'm not sure that I would put much effort into doing anything about cholesterol. Now, eating a better diet, that's always a good thing. So if this motivates you to say, okay, I'm going to change some habits, what I would encourage you to do is increase your fat consumption. Not decrease it. I would encourage you to increase your good fat consumption and lower your carbs. That's the only thing that's ever been shown to improve cholesterol numbers anyway. Vegetarian diets don't do it. Vegan diets don't. I mean, they will improve your numbers, but not as much as a high-fat, low-carb diet does. So if you want to do anything, I would say, I mean, certainly eating healthier is always a good thing. But it gets confusing in our world today about what eating healthy means. What it means to me is the more whole real food you eat, the healthier you're going to be. And in that whole real food, we do want to include animal products. We want to include animal fats, and we want to eat a lot of vegetables. Other than that, I wouldn't complicate this too much.
Okay. And what do you mean by good fat? Like increase your good fat?
So it's the opposite of what we've been told. We've been told avoid saturated fat and eat plant-based fats, and that's not true. The vegetable oils are what's killing us. The vegetable oils are what's causing heart disease and many of the other things. We were told to stay away from animal fats. But if we eat good quality animal fats, so fat from animals that have been raised naturally on pasture, grass-fed beef, you know, pastured pork and chicken. And, you know, we eat the fattier cuts of those meats. So we don't eat a lean steak. We eat a beef short rib, something that's got quite a bit of fat in it. That fat's good for us. Coconut oil is loaded with saturated fat, but it's incredibly healthy. Grass-fed butter is a great fat. Eggs are an awesome fat, as long as you're not reacting to eggs. A lot of people are actually allergic and react to eggs. If you're concerned about that, it's a fairly simple test. Avocados are excellent. Olive oil is good. Make sure you're really getting olive oil. There's a lot of fake olive oil on the market, and you don't want to cook with olive oil. You always want to keep it cold. Nuts and seeds are excellent sources of fat. So macadamia nuts, walnuts, pecans, virtually any nut except peanuts, because that's not really a nut. That's a legume, and they're not all that healthy. So skip the peanuts, eat every other kind of nut. Seeds are high in fat, but it's really good fat. So pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, any of those are good sources of fat as well.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good start. And I appreciate that information.
You're welcome. And then lower carbohydrate numbers. Don't worry about counting carbs when it comes to vegetables. Vegetables all have carbs. Don't even count those. Don't worry about them. But you want to avoid all the other carbs, simple sugars, high starchy foods like potatoes. I would eliminate all grains. That will make your cholesterol numbers improve really quickly. Let's go to Massachusetts. Jimmy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you this afternoon?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
Well, this is my first year being an owner-operator, and I wanted you to look at my business report and tell me how I'm doing. I got a 2012 ProStar, and I'm leased on to a flatbed operation out of Omaha, and I think I'm doing pretty good, but I wanted your opinion.
Well, I think based on your numbers here that for your first year, you are doing really well. Certainly, there's room for improvement, but the beauty of it is you're tracking your numbers, you're asking. That's the whole point. So few people do that in their first year that they struggle for many years. So this is a great first start. We're at $1.30 a mile, all miles. That's not anything to get overly excited about, but it's a good foundation to work from. You worked considerably harder than the last person. You did 131,000 miles. And net profit, which is what we're really interested in, was 46 cents a mile. Again, not anything to get overly excited about, but it's a great first year. It's a great foundation to work from. So that means you were able to take home $61,000. You know, honestly, there aren't that many driving jobs around where you're going to make that. The average driver's making 45, 50,000. So for a first-year owner-operator, you did extremely well. Your fuel cost is right at 30 cents a mile, so we could improve a little there. Maintenance cost is 15 cents a mile for your truck. That's a pretty good number. I mean, we might be able to
Yeah.
With that
2012 ProStar with that lovely Max Force engine in it.
Then let me correct myself. 15 cents a mile is outstanding. for that truck. These are good numbers. I mean, I very seldom see people do this well in their first year. So congratulations on that. And what I would say is just keep doing more of what you're doing. One of the things I see here that I'm just wondering, your insurance cost seems really high. Being leased to a carrier, I normally see it 4, 5, 6 cents a mile. Yours is 11. Why are you paying so much insurance?
I think what you're looking at is I include my health insurance in that insurance thing because it comes out of my settlement every week.
Okay.
And that's about $200 a week for that.
Okay, so I'm going to make a recommendation, but this is just on the way you're doing your accounting. And that would explain, that would make this number look a little better. We'll talk about that right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phones. I was talking with Jimmy in Massachusetts. So again, Jimmy, the numbers, they look good. I would just keep doing what you're doing. When I went into the break, I had a thought, and I was looking at something else on your numbers, and I lost it. What did I say I was going to tell you when I came back?
We were talking about the insurance and the health insurance being added into all my insurance from there.
That's right. I was looking through the numbers and I lost my train of thought there. The way I would do your accounting is in the program in Profit Gauges, we allow you to create subcategories. So under insurance, you could create a subcategory for health insurance. That way those numbers get separated because we have to report them differently on the tax return as well. So at the end of the year, we're going to have to split those numbers up. You might as well split it up every month. That way, when we look at the report, it makes more sense. Other than that, I mean, your reporting looks excellent. And again, this is a great first year. So congratulations.
Well, thank you, sir. I got one more question if I can.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, as far as idling, I have a truck and it has that anti-idle system on it. But if you have to sit for 34 hours, of course, you have to run your truck the next day. It's battery operated. When does the fuel have to be high enough where you can actually, I mean, I go get a motel room. I mean, I'm just going to go get a motel room because I don't like to idle to begin with, and it costs money on the other hand.
See, I think.
At what point does fuel have to be, yeah.
You know, it's never an easy answer. We could calculate a lot of different ways, but here's one of the ways to look at it. I just don't see a good APU for anything less than $10,000. I mean, you can go out if you're handy. I've seen people go out and buy gas generators and, you know, window air conditioners and put it all together. And it works great. And it's fairly inexpensive. And if you can do that, fantastic. But if you're looking for the typical turnkey pull in, they hook up a generator to your truck or an APU, you're looking at $10,000 initial cost or more, and they're not free to operate. They still require fuel. They still require maintenance. They will still break down. That's a lot of money. So I'm kind of with you. You have an option that allows you to go short periods of time without idling at all. And if it's going to be a longer period of time, hell, hotel rooms are $40 or $50 in some places. I can get a lot of hotel rooms without ever coming near what I have to spend for an APU. And I get a whole lot more than power. I get a nice, comfortable bed to sleep in. I get a shower. I get some room to stretch. I might get a gym that I can work out at. It's a break out of the truck. So when I drove, that was my standard business model. I had a cab over with a tiny little bunk, and I would only spend about 6 hours in there at most. If I needed to grab some sleep, I'd sleep. If it was going to be longer than that, I'd get a room. It was just, I just thought that was a better way to live, and it was less expensive.
I agree 100%. Because if you figure it out, by the time you get a shower, you idle your fuel, and you get a free breakfast at a lot of them, hey, I think that's well worth the money.
There you go. There's another benefit. So, you know, it's funny, though, over the years when I've said this, people react like I have three heads. I mean, they're like, oh, my God, you pay for a hotel. Yeah, I used to pay for a lot of hotel rooms. I mean, my typical operation, I used to leave on Sunday night, and I'd usually come back sometime Friday night. I would try to be home most weekends, and once in a while I'd get home during the week. But I might get two or three hotel rooms in that time. Because, like I said, if it was going to be more than 6 hours or so, I'm just going to go grab a room. I have a shower, I have food, I have cable, I have room to work, I probably have a gym, a pool, a hot tub. And maybe if I'm finding nicer hotels, I might be spending 70 or 80 or 90 bucks. But there's discount programs. There's, you know, loyalty programs. When you do it right, you can get a lot of benefit out of hotel rooms for a lot cheaper than.
I agree. And I want to thank you for all your information and everything you do. And I will cut you loose so you can get to another call.
There you go. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. Let's go to Maine. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going, man?
Good. What's on your mind?
Have you heard of a book called, it's a nutritional book. I think it was written by some doctor. It's called How Not to Die. It's making rounds. It's fairly new.
I did read that book. I read it last year sometime.
Okay.
Let me try to the title sounds totally familiar, so I know I've read this one. I got to go back and look at it because I've read so many. I want to remember what this one was about. Yes, this by Michael Greger. He is a doctor. I did read this one. This was a good book. There's a lot of stuff in here I really liked. I remember this.
Isn't he recommending totally against eating any protein from any living animal, including fish, chicken, beef, and all that?
You know, here's the thing that I tend to do with this kind of advice. What you find is doctors, researchers, even people like me, a lot of times they tend to focus in on one area. And we can learn a lot from them, but then I might look at other people and read other books. A lot of his advice was good. I don't agree with him on the animal protein, although I will say, as a society, we probably eat way too much of it. And we seem to value quantity over quality. And I think that's where we've gotten into the problem. We want to go in and get the prime rib buffet and stuff our face full of 2 pounds of prime rib that was conventionally raised. Well, rather than do that, give me 4 to 6 ounces of a really high quality grass-fed pastured beef. And that is healthy. So I don't totally disagree with him. We over-consume our protein, our animal protein, and we consume really poor quality animal protein. You know, people think, well, I had salmon last week, but it was farm-raised, and that stuff's horrible. But give me, again, and I will say with fish or seafood, it's pretty hard to overdo that. You know, I don't see very many people eating too much wild salmon. That would be hard to do. One, it's expensive. Two, it's hard to come by. So we tend to overeat the beef, the pork, and the chicken that's been conventionally raised, and it's not all that healthy. And, you know, some people say, oh, but I'm not going to eat, you know, that grass-fed beef you talk about because it's $15 a pound. Yeah, it is, but I'm spending less than I used to because I just don't eat that much of it. You know, I eat 4 to 6 ounces at a time, and I load it up with good quality fat, so it's very satisfying. I don't feel the need to eat more than that. So I do agree with a lot that was in that book, but I would also say eating animal protein, you know, in the right way is very good for us. Being really healthy as a vegetarian is extremely difficult. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but well, you better know what you're doing when it comes to nutrition. Like B vitamins are very hard to come by as a vegetarian. So I'm not going to say you can't be healthy as a vegetarian. It's just too much work for me. I prefer eating those really good, high quality animal products.
I have a, I was wondering, I eat a lot of high quality protein, wild salmon and grass fed beef.
Good.
I was reading an article on, dairy products, and, the article on milk kind of scared me, and although I totally cut milk out of my diet, I know that the butter is almost along the same line, although it has less of the offending properties in there. And I was wondering if you can minimize animal fat in your ketogenic diet, if that would be beneficial at all, if you're eating the good butter, like the Kerrygold butter. And
yeah, you know,
try to get your sources of fat from other places.
Yeah, dairy is probably one of the most controversial topics when we talk about really eating well, and especially paleo. In true paleo, you would eliminate all dairy. The quality of our dairy sucks. If you're getting local raw dairy, then that's probably a different story. But dairy is one of those things I would say that you could eliminate it completely. Ghee, if you want a good butter substitute, ghee is just clarified butter, and it takes out more of those problematic. It gets rid of more of the casein, almost all of it, and the lactose is gone. So a good high-quality ghee is a great way to go. But milk and cheese and those kind of things, you could eliminate those and still be healthy pretty easily. I got to go. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we're going to call that a wrap today. We will see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour and general questions. We'll see you then.